This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. Well, whether you're seething or celebrating, nearly everyone is shocked at the results of the 2016 presidential election. Hillary Clinton holds a narrow lead in the popular vote, but she has lost the Electoral College. GLT's Mike McCurdy is in the studio with more.
Willis, Hillary Clinton has now delivered her concession speech. She said, Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and an open chance to lead. And Donald Trump is still picking up some Electoral College votes. Three more from Alaska. Joining us on Sound Ideas, as they have since this summer's GOP and DNC conventions, are Tom McClure and Eric Rankin, both with Illinois State University's Politics and Government Department. Thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Thanks, Thank Mike.
First, I want your reaction to these results. Tom McClure.
Well, I had thought that this would be a very close race. I figured that Clinton was going to get the majority, the plurality of the votes, which is what happened. And when I was looking over the last 2 weeks over what was happening in the swing states, it appeared that it was going to be a very close election. So I'm not particularly surprised, but I wouldn't have been surprised if Clinton had won as well.
And Eric Rankin.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you that I'm not shocked. I mean, I was absolutely and utterly shocked. Every indicator that we had from every major pollster made it look like it was basically a foregone conclusion. And I think that, you know, I, as the political scientist who's been trained to trust numbers and research and not my gut, was really, I was sucked in by it. And so the outcome was very shocking because nobody had that go in the way that it did.
So why weren't you surprised, Tom? Look, based on the polls, why weren't you more surprised at these results?
I think that people who were supporting Trump, who did not fit the uneducated white male profile, felt shamed if they were to reveal that they were supporting Trump.
So they lied to the pollsters, you think?
No, I'm not saying that. They either didn't participate. They said that they were undecided. I just think that they were out of it. And I think that's one thing. I think the other thing is that there were people who voted this time who didn't vote 4 years ago, and I don't think they got picked up by the pollsters.
What went right? What went right for Donald Trump, Eric Rankin?
A lot of things.
The uneducated white vote.
I think that we underestimated the uneducated white vote. I think we also the African American vote didn't turn out to the same levels. And when you look in a lot of these states, the margin. Tom and I were talking about this before we went on the air. I mean, there were razor thin margins in a number of these states: Wisconsin, Michigan, New Hampshire. You know, across the board, and North Carolina. And even you're talking, if you're even fudging a percent or two in terms of, you know, turnout from 2012, that's enough to swing an election. We also saw that the Latino vote, which did come out pretty big, you're talking 80% was going for Hillary, while it was in the teens for Trump, with the exception of Florida, which ended up being 67 to, I think it was in the high 20s, low 30s, which showed us that the Cuban American population was not persuaded by Hillary's message.
So the Democrats apparently misread the dissatisfied white populist vote. How did they speak to this population? Did they speak to this population, Tom McClure?
I don't think that they've spoken to that population for the last 8 years. And I think that that's part of the reason why someone like Trump can have that kind of enthusiasm for a campaign. I think that that's the problem. I think that the Democrats are going to have to rethink who they're serving. I think that they were focused more on the lower strata of society and the elites. They've left out the middle class.
Do you think voters decided to compromise on their values at all for the sake of change, Tom? Did they decide to discount some of the things that Donald Trump had said during the campaign simply to move away from the status quo?
Absolutely. I would think that the evangelicals would vote for him on two bases. One, the Supreme Court, and second, that he has Mike Pence. I think that that would be enough for them to vote his way, even though that there's so much that he says that is distasteful to that group.
Eric Rankin, what do you think happens at the table during the Democratic postmortem?
You know, it's a great question. I think that what the Democrats have to do now is it time to change strategy. They have a couple of things that they can do. One is they can rely upon the fact that the future is probably in their best interest, right? So what I mean by that is that the numbers for minorities continue to grow while numbers for white America continues to stay static, if not recede just a little bit. So what does that mean? It means that over a period of time, we're going to still probably see states. The Southwest is going to start to change. And we've already started to get a little bit of a hint of that because Arizona was a light pink.
So we thought that was going to happen in this election.
We did. And that was the problem. It's not fast enough. And Trump was the type of guy. I mean, I was just talking to a student before I came over here. Every election is one of two things. It's either change or continuity. And what the Democrats did that they understood in 2008 is that the American people were ready for change. Come hell or high water, and Obama was the messenger of change. 8 years later, it's now another change election, and Hillary Clinton was seen as the continuity candidate. There was really nothing that they could have done. Now, I will also say is that the Democrats are going to do the same thing the Republicans did in the postmortem of 2012. Was it our message or was it our person? And I think in a lot of respects, too, you have to look at Hillary Clinton as a deeply flawed candidate. And had they, I mean, this is going to be the $1 million question. Had this been Bernie Sanders, is this a different
outcome? So that was my question. Did they back the wrong horse? And would we have seen a different result with a Sanders-Trump matchup? Would Sanders, Tom McClure, have been able to speak to those disaffected white voters?
Well, certainly he speaks to the disaffected voters. I don't know whether it's the same group. He certainly would speak to the young, the millennials, but I don't know whether it would necessarily be to the same voters that you'd have in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio. So I'm not quite sure.
And do you agree with what I think Eric Rankin said, which is the Republican Party will eventually run out of a white majority vote?
Well, that's assuming that people vote according to race preferences. If you take a look...
Well, they apparently are, well, to a large degree.
Well, if you take a look, you make a comparison to the voters who went for Clinton this time compared to Obama, she didn't pick up the same percentage of the black vote, even the female vote. It was not the same as Obama. So I think that part of the problem is, as Eric pointed out, there's a deeply flawed candidate.
What do these results mean for the Sanders-Elizabeth Warren wing of the party, Eric Rankin?
I think what it means, I mean, for them, they're going to look at it and say, hey, listen, we're the ones that had the same economic populist message that really resonated on the right. If you'd only listened to us and you had only picked up the same sort of a thing, people were ripe for change. And the Sanders-Warren message would have played very well as well. I think that it would have been, you know, and I guess that it's difficult for people to, it's easy to armchair quarterback this and say, oh, yeah, you know, Bernie would have done better. But I think the message in and of itself. Bernie was not more of the same. He never would have been viewed as a continuity of Obama. He would have been viewed as a change candidate himself. So now you're into two change agents. It takes away the Republicans' argument that this is the only person that can exact change. And you could have argued that Bernie was the much bigger change agent than what we were getting with Donald Trump.
And Eric, what do you think is the motto for Republicans moving forward? More of the same?
Yeah, no. I think that if you're I would say as the Democratic Party has to hope that they think that more of the same is going to work. I don't think that the Republican Party can stand this type of divisiveness, you know, and this type of rhetoric that we saw in this campaign.
So you think this presidential campaign may be an aberration?
I think it's absolutely an anomaly.
Tom?
Well, yeah, it certainly is. I've said from the outset that this is an unconventional campaign. But this is truly a change that we haven't seen. People thought that with Obama. I thought that it was going to be a change with him. When he starts filling his cabinet, it's with people from the Clinton administration. Now you've got a President Trump who basically has no support from any of the past Republican presidents or from any of the candidates except for Bob Dole. That's it. So we are going to now see a complete change in the people who are at the reins of power. So we're going to see change, and we'll just have to see how that works.
Well, with the exception of that, we're getting rumors that the new Gingrich is on the list for Secretary of State, that Rudy Giuliani is on the list for Attorney General. So those are still people that are part of that. I mean, Rudy Giuliani and Gingrich are part of an establishment. I mean, he doesn't look to be going too far outside of that. Whether or not that'll actually come to fruition, I don't know.
Will this further embolden the alt-right, white supremacists, nationalists who all sort of jumped on board the Trump campaign? And what do you think are the consequences if this sort of continues? We see this continued sort of undercurrent of support for the GOP, Eric.
This is my biggest fear. I really do believe that Donald Trump was able to tap into this – very, while I don't necessarily always agree that Donald Trump is himself a racist, a number of things that he said had serious racist undertones to them, or overt, just depending on how you wanted to look at it. And you can't stop the fact that there were massive groups that were part of the alt-right and that were very racist. I mean, David Duke the next day is out, tweeting that, yes, we were successful.
Do we know if David Duke lost his senatorial campaign in Louisiana? Did he lose? He was a minor party candidate.
I'm pretty sure he lost.
Same question for you, Tom, about the alt-right, white supremacist nationalists and the connection strengthened during this campaign with the GOP.
Well, I agree that there would be a strengthening, but I still see that as a fringe group, so I don't see them developing any kind of a power base nationally.
There was a spat during the campaign after Ohio governor and GOP presidential candidate John Kasich was offered the VP position before Pence. Kasich has said that Donald Trump Jr. tried to entice him with the VP post and told an aide that he'd be the most powerful vice president in history, putting him in charge of all domestic and foreign policy. That said, what role do you think we'll see VP Pence play in a Trump administration? Will Donald Trump govern at all? Tom McClure?
I don't really know. I think the one thing that we know about Donald Trump is
could you see Donald Trump handing that off?
I can't imagine him handing off to anyone. I mean, it seems like he's so self-centered that it would be very difficult for him to do that. But that being said, there's no question that he handed off a tremendous responsibility of the campaign to a female. The very first Republican female campaign manager, and she did a brilliant job for him. So I think that if he thinks someone can do a good job, he's probably willing to delegate even on the big things.
And Eric, the role of VP Pence in a Trump administration and Trump's willingness to govern.
Yeah, I agree with Tom wholeheartedly. I can't see Donald Trump ceding control of anything to anybody. It took a monumental effort just to get his Twitter away from him in the last couple of days of the campaign. I can't imagine that he's going to cede ground, because then that gives Mike Pence the ability to take credit for things too. And Donald Trump is a winner, right? He's the one that has to have everything attached to his name. So I can't see this. It'll be interesting to see how he does dispatch Mike Pence, though. Will Mike Pence take the traditional role of the VP attack dog, or will he just be that person that he ships off to some of the social conservative places that Trump's still not going to play well with?
A lot of promises made by the Trump campaign during this presidential season. Let's talk about jobs and manufacturing. He's promised to return those jobs to former manufacturing regions of this country. Can he do that, Eric?
No. If anybody thinks that manufacturing jobs are coming back to the United States, they need to have their head examined. We have moved on and we have moved past that. The world has moved past that. And that's the effect of globalization. And he's going to have to – that's a bold promise that those individuals in the Rust Belt areas, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, they're going to hold him to this.
And Tom, what do you think? Can altering trade deals affect that, the return of jobs?
I question whether it can. I think that that's a challenge for Trump. It will be like his Guantanamo Bay promise. Yep. that Obama made. It's a great promise. You can get people to go with you on it. But here we are 8 years later. It hasn't happened. I see the same thing on this.
What about immigration? Huge issue in this campaign. Do his supporters think he was speaking metaphorically about a wall along the southern border? Tom?
Certainly, their supporters think that it's an actual wall, and I think that's what Trump was talking of. I believe that we are going to see immigration being debated, and I think a wall is going to be part of the dialogue. I personally don't think that that's going to be his big move at the outset. I think that it's going to be two other issues that we're going to see in the first 100 days. I think we're going to see the dismantling of Obamacare, and we're going to see the appointment of the Supreme Court Justice.
Is there a replacement for Obamacare, do you think? Will there be another plan to pick up the slack for those people that will have their health insurance cut off?
Well, from what I've heard just in the last 24 hours, it appears that there may be some sort of a transition so that people are not going to be kept without health care. But there's a lot of people who have Obamacare who are not happy with it because of the rise in premiums.
And Eric Rankin, we were talking about immigration policy, a wall. What do you think about Trump and his ability to actually deliver on that promise?
There will never be the type of wall that is built that Donald Trump was talking about. And for the very reason that the people in Congress that were just elected, most of them went there on this idea that they are fiscally conservative. The second that we figure out that Mexico really isn't going to pay for it and that we would have to
Did anyone actually ever think that Mexico was going to pay for it? Did his supporters buy it?
I think that some of his supporters, okay. I mean, clearly, I think they did. And as soon as the fiscal conservatives get the bill for the type of wall he's talking about, there's no way it happens.
And what about deportations? Will we see deportations of some sort to satisfy some of his supporters, Eric?
It's fascinating. I mean, I still laugh every time I hear about this question about deportations, because Barack Obama has been one of the strongest. I mean, he has deported more people than any other president in the history of the United States. All he has to do is continue doing what Obama has already done. It'll be hard. I mean, is he going to try and outdo Barack Obama? I don't know. I could see that. I mean, it would fit with his rhetoric, whether or not he has the ability. Again, this is going to cost a lot of money.
So Tom McClure, ISU politics and government professor, if Donald Trump cannot deliver in 4 years on some of these promises like a wall, what happens at the midterm elections? If in 2 years some of these things don't happen?
Well, traditionally, the president loses members of Congress during the off-term election. That's the typical scenario. I would expect the same here. I wanted to comment.
Even with redistricting in the states that have taken place to favor the GOP?
I would think so. I think that there would still be a loss. That's typically what happens. I wanted to comment.
Just one moment, Eric. You were shaking your head at that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, at least in the Senate, I mean, the Dems are going to be defending more seats in the next election. And I'm not convinced. I mean, the House is still pretty far out of reach for the Democrats.
Sure. Okay, Tom.
I was just going to comment on immigration. I agree with Eric that Obama had more deportations in his presidency than historically. However, in the last 2 years, that changed. It slowed down. So what I would expect is that it would go back up to the level that Obama had during his first term as opposed to his second term.
So I'm hearing maybe from both of you that we could see a voter backlash in 2 years or 4 years if Donald Trump is not able to deliver on some of these promises to the white populist voters who put him into office.
It's certainly possible.
My view is that it would be just like the backlash that Obama had after his first 2 years, because he came into his first term with a Democratic Senate and Democratic House. That was the only time, the first 2 years. I expect that is a possibility for Trump.
Broadly, what are some of the pitfalls ahead over the next 4 years with a GOP-controlled House, Senate, and White House? They own it, right?
They
own everything.
They do.
And so anything that goes right or wrong is theirs.
It is. And so if you're the Republicans, this is a huge opportunity, right? If you could make substantive change and get the American people to go, wow, he really did, he really did make good on this promise, then there's opportunity there. But there's also a huge hole for them to fall into. You made all these bold promises and then you didn't do anything to achieve these things. There's a serious amount of danger that the Republicans are in. But listen, I guarantee you the Democrats would rather be in the position that the Republicans are in than the position that they're in right now.
And Tom, same question. All the Senate, the House, the White House, all controlled by the GOP. A risk of hubris here, overstepping?
I think what we're going to see is a massive tax reform, and that is either going to be a great success or a tremendous failure. And whatever happens with that is going to dictate what the fate of the Republican Party is.
And quickly, to both of you, was this a repudiation at all of President Obama in the last 8 years? Tom?
Absolutely. It's a referendum on Obamacare, among other things.
And Eric?
In a lot of ways, yes, but I still think that everybody knows who's really at fault here for this, and it's the Chicago Cubs.
All right. Thankfully, thank God, some humor to end this conversation. Tom McClure, Eric Rankin are with Illinois State University's Politics and Government Department, and they've joined us on Sound Ideas since this summer's nominating conventions. I hope, if you're available, you'll continue to join us regularly, maybe as we move through the transition, and maybe the next 100 days, if you're both willing.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Sound Ideas on GLT.